This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 13th of October, 1954. The title of this lecture is Spotting Spots. This tape is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right, today I would like very much to talk to you about spotting spots as one of the basic techniques which you must know if you are going to know what there is to know about auditing. You understand that we are covering here the six basic processes and the one piece of information, seven in all, which an auditor simply has to have. We have to have these things. And if he has these things done, if he knows these things well, then he can take any process there is and go at it and function with it. Now, out of these six, there is one notable piece of technology missing. That technology which immediately addresses engrams and runs them to erasure, as covered in book one. We are not covering that. Do you notice this? And these six items that we're training you with, we do not cover that. Why don't we cover it? Because in perfect duplication, one of the root two processes, we can make an engram vanish in a very short space of time. These six steps which you're getting are superior to the running of engrams. Any day of the week, superior to the running of engrams. Why? Well, I gave that to you yesterday, didn't I? Remedy of havingness. And if you wanted really to run engrams, all you would have to do would be to remedy enough havingness, and you would have run out all the engrams which are in your stimulation. Why are they in restimulation? Because the person's havingness is low, so he brings in these masses of energy upon himself. You see? Brings in the masses of energy upon himself in lieu of other energy deposits, and so gets engrams in restimulation. Now you must realize that and know why then we aren't teaching or working with the running of engrams. Now you could run engrams and remedy havingness, and run engrams and remedy havingness, and very possibly it would be a technique which had some value. It takes a long time to run an engram. It takes longer to run an engram than we care to spend on a free clear today. So although engrams can be run, remember that when they are run, we run into the liability that havingness is reduced in the free clear and therefore must be remedied. It's the mass of energy. In the opinion of a Thetan, anything is better than nothing, and so he will accumulate this mass. So you understand now very clearly that we are studying the six techniques and the one piece of knowledge which is absolutely essential to an auditor. We go on from there to learn many other things, but these are still the basics that we are dealing with. And those basics are, of course, two-way communication, elementary straight wire, the opening procedure of HC, the opening procedure by duplication, the remedy of havingness and spotting spots in space, and the one piece of information we have to have is the chart of human evaluation. Now, if we know these items, then we're in good order and we can do all of these things. And I pointed out that the one thing that you might find missing in this lineup would be the running of engrams, but it is not missing. It is under remedy of havingness. Remedy enough havingness, in other words, have a person bring in masses and throw away masses and, you know, create masses and pull them in on himself and so forth. You run out every engram in the bank. There's another way of running engrams. Perfect duplication, which I just mentioned to him. You put him back down the track, have him take a look at it, make a perfect duplicate of it, and poof, it's gone. All right. What do you think that does to havingness? Just a sudden, sweeping disappearance of these huge ridges and masses. Oh, man. Here's typical case history on this. Typical case history. I'm going over this very carefully because it's very germane to spotting spots in space. Oh, everything I'm saying here has to do with spotting spots in space. All right, we've had this happen several times, but to give you one particular example of this, there were three people who were retread in Unit 7, that is to say they were holdover, and I came up here, and I released Perfect Duplication to them, you see, and told them all about Perfect Duplication. And they were the most wildly excited people you ever saw in your life. These people were trained, basically, in running of engrams. And they suddenly had realized, after I told them about Perfect Duplication, that they could get the goal of book one, which was to say, run out every single engram in the bank from A to Z. Zoom! That's all the body's composed of, is engrams, solids. Well, they came up here the first day, and were they excited? Oh, they were just thrilled to death. Why, all they'd have to do was look at birth, you know, and make a perfect duplicate of it. Gone. Look at act one. Perfect duplicate. Gone, you see. Gone, gone. This one missing, that one missing. First day, oh, they were excited. Second day, it was still working, and I didn't quite understand why I wasn't insisting that everybody in the seventh unit do this as the exclusive technique. And the third day, one of them was out here on the porch. And he had had enough having us run out here to where the whole physical universe, you see, was dimming out and getting thin and doing other interesting things. Boy, that havingness was really shot. Well, that's why we don't make perfect duplicates of the whole thing, engram after engram, until we have clear. See, there was a bug in clearing. You see, book one did not reach down into those people who could not create energy anymore. You know, people who were no longer able to create energy and who didn't create energy at will, book one didn't touch them. Now, what was the bug there? This was the tough case. These persons were no longer creating energy. So you run a few engrams, and he would never mark up the difference. He would just go down into this havingness factor. So we've actually reached far south then of running engrams, and we've gotten into remedy of havingness, haven't we? See, far south. All right. We're way down the rock bottom now with these techniques, but we're talking about techniques that will take people who are practically dead, you know, and they'll do something with them. And none of these techniques have a big liability connected with them. That's quite important. None of these techniques have a big liability, but on the other side of the picture, they have an enormous lot of benefit to go along with them, so they're the basic techniques. But I talked to you yesterday about remedy of havingness, and I talked to you about remedy of havingness before I'm talking to you about spotting spots in space for the excellent reason that you cannot have a free clear spots in space unless you know about the remedy of havingness. You follow me? Now, you would not go out here and take somebody you were teaching how to audit or something of the sort and show this individual how to spot spots in space without teaching about remedy of havingness. What would happen? The same thing would happen if you started spotting spots in space as would happen if you started making perfect duplicates. You just run all the person's havingness right on down. Boom, gone. All right, so therefore, spotting spots in space is actually a joint technique. It runs right in there with remedy of happiness. These two things belong right together. I mean, quite important. And with these two things, remedy of happiness, spotting spots in space, you can do any trick that could have been done with book one or in the processing section of Science of Survival. Just these two things. Somebody wrote me in here the other day, very excited. Extremely excited because they found out that by doing nothing but remedy happiness for the pre-clear for 8 hours, that his Sonic and Vizio and everything else had turned on. In other words, this person had finally, this person finished, I believe, in unit 5 or 6. This person had learned that remedy happiness worked. But they omitted spotting spots in space, and yet they turned on this person's Sonic and Vizio. Between these two processes, you would think offhand that the remedy of havingness was the more important process, wouldn't you? Therefore, if you did it for 8 hours, you think it was the more important process. No, it's not really, because it only refers to matter, and you're trying to get the pre-clear up to where he can get space. We want this pre-clear to have space. All right, so we've got to play these things one against the other. He's either got to have a remedy of havingness, or he's got to have his space remedy. And every time you try to remedy some pre-clear space, you're going to tear his havingness up. And every time you try to remedy his havingness, you're going to tear his space up. So we have to play these things one against the other until he gets up to a point where he can actually create space and create havingness. So these two techniques, the most important for a low-level case is the remedy of havingness, certainly. But once you've remedied happiness, remember, we still have another factor, the remedy of space. And when we take the remedy of space, we get into spotting spots. All right, let's get into this whole technique of spotting spots. Let's discover that the first thing there is to know about spotting spots is the theory of space. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. Argue with it if you want to, but it happens to be a workable definition, and space being a viewpoint of dimension is the first definition of space. There has not been, prior to Scientology, a definition of space. There was space, and space is a manifestation of energy and time, but we don't quite know how this works. Einstein, his last paper, I think, dabbles with this and fools around with it, and all he does is relate space to energy and time. It does not relate space to humanity, and space is a human or life experience. In the absence of life, it wouldn't be. That's Descartes' old idea of tree fell in the forest, there was nobody there to hear, why would there have been a sound? Yeah, trees can hear. Trees are alive. But let's take nothing but no life and no evidence or manifestation of life. Take no life and no evidence or manifestation of life, you wouldn't have had a sound. You wouldn't have space. That's the truth of the matter. Now, in the, I think, the 11th edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, it says that physics must begin with the research of the psychological phenomena of space, energy, and time. And unless it does so begin, then it will not have a definition of space. This, by the way, was first written about 1890. Nobody in psychology ever paid any attention to it, and nobody in physics ever paid any attention to it. I came along, all of a sudden, paid attention to it. I was asked to study the physical universe. I was being asked to study nuclear physics, atomic molecular phenomena, all sorts of odds and ends and incomprehensibles, and they had not basically resolved the most fundamental things they had to resolve, which are space, energy, and time. What are these things? They're psychological phenomena. That's all they are. And the whole science of physics, then, is entirely dependent upon the mind. You want to know why, then, did a nuclear physicist ever go into the field of the mind? Why did we ever get Dianetics and Scientology? Why did we become interested in it? Well, I became definitely interested in it because the smallest unit of energy I could find must be a mental unit of energy. That must be the smallest unit of energy there was because of memory. Here's this little tiny brain. It's supposed to be able to store some tremendous number of memories. Therefore, it must be a very tiny unit of energy. Well, that's where I came in, and then I noticed way later this about the Encyclopedia Britannica and other speculations upon this particular line, and I became, of course, interested in the field of the mind. Well, because nobody else had made this bridge, nobody else had stepped out of physics and gotten into psychology, because people in psychology, we've left that for a moment of prayer, you go around and you ask a psychologist to add up a column of twos. He says, huh? And you say, well, now you tell a psychologist, you know the Einstein theory. And he says, huh? And you say to him, now you take scientific methodology. He says, huh? You know what he's talking about. He's not trained in mathematics. He's not trained in physics, chemistry, or any of these other things. He has no discipline. A psychologist is incapable. And I say this without any reservation whatsoever, or selecting out any psychologist. I mean, I don't make exceptions here at all. They are utterly, completely incapable of a scientific experiment. The wildest things you ever beheld in your life are in psychological textbooks, mostly because the psychologist has never had a course in discipline where scientific methodology is concerned. And similarly, a physicist is so ingrained in the idea that the physical universe is fine and that a computing machine gives you the right answers, and the human brain is full of errors, that he would not spit on the human mind. The human mind, huh, that's nothing. Human beings, boo, they're no good. Do you know that's why a physicist does not even vaguely consult his conscience when he builds an atom bomb to blow cities out of existence? It's just that type of training and thought in physics classes amongst physicists and engineering schools, you see. The human mind's no good, it's full of errors, and so on. In other words, these two groups, psychology and physics, have dragged themselves so far apart that they've forgotten one of the basic things that was discovered in this field, and that is that space, energy, and time had to be resolved in the field of life experience before they could be solved in the field of physics. And it says that in 1890 in the Encyclopedia Britannica. You wouldn't say then that the datum was completely unknown, would you? And why was it that it took 1932, an indifferent student in physics, who was not terribly interested in physics, but who was in engineering school because Papa was certain that if his son became an engineer, why, his own lifelong ambition would be fulfilled. His son at that time was, by the way, a very good mystic and had no feeling for this physical universe here at all, indoctrinated wholly in the Orient on the basis of leave it alone, back off, go away. I had to sit in classes and learn mathematics. I had to learn physics and chemistry and atomic and molecular phenomena and so forth. My grade sheet is the disgrace of that university. It is. But I got through. They had to pass me through, mostly because they knew very well that I would never really disgrace their school by entering into the field, since I was already a successful writer. And that was, by the way, what the dean said. You know, the only reason I'm letting you through here at all is because you probably never practice engineering, so we're going to fix you up and pass you through. So the only reason he did that is because I taught him how to fly gliders. I was also an associate editor on the university paper and said nasty things about departments that didn't pass me. But my grade sheet even then was a terrible disgrace. But in spite of that fact, I had been seated in classes where they were throwing every imaginable kind of mathematics at me and all kinds of physical sciences, and I had to absorb them and study them and know them. And so we got an unwilling marriage between mental phenomena and physical phenomena. Quite similarly, I'd been trained in mental phenomena already in the East. And when they trained me in physical phenomena, practically over my dead body, I was forced to add up the two to keep my own sanity. Because by that time I felt fairly groggy because these fields did not agree. Actually, I did not get a definition for space until just a few years ago, only a couple of years ago. It first appears in Scientology 88008. That is what makes Scientology 88008 a noteworthy piece of work. It is an examination and a final conclusion. And those conclusions, by the way, have not been improved upon later. I mean, I have not revised them. 1932 to 1953, that's how long it took to get some kind of a thing and really sit down and conclude this relationship. And this relationship starts with this definition: space is a viewpoint of dimension. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. Know that. It'll be on all your examination papers. It'll be something that you have to demand of your students and so forth. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. That's all space is. You can go back to the ancient philosophers and you can dig up other material, but you find no definite positive definition of space. This definition of space is so workable in the field of atomic science that when it was given to an engineer, a nuclear physicist working on a government project, the guy turned kind of white, turned around, grabbed the phone, called up the plant, told him to shut down boiler 7. He all of a sudden integrated this definition, see, and he says, oh no, that'll go sky high sooner or later. See, space is a viewpoint of dimension. Okay, it makes sense in further mathematics. All right, if space is a viewpoint of dimension, then we discover that you have to have something viewing from the viewpoint in order to have the phenomenon of space. That's true, too. So that your preclear, sitting where he is, although this just works right straight on down the line, I mean, it's one of the smoothest workouts you ever saw for the mind. The preclear who hasn't a point from which to view doesn't have space. And a preclear who has had to move off a point after point after point after point after point in life, you see, he's had to desert his viewpoints, desert his orientation points, in other words, desert them, all of a sudden, he doesn't know where he is. He's lost, and he doesn't have any space. Now, you can test this out. You can go out and find people who have been moved all over Earth by an army officer father or something like that. You can find this fellow, and he's been changed around an awful lot, and you can ask him to close his eyes and find out what kind of a concept of space he's got, and he'll feel his space is right up here, even closer to him than his own nose. There is no space. And you watch this fellow, you watch how he works. In order to have an office that he can really function in, he'll have to have his desk in it. It'll have to be a small office. He'll have to have his desk in it, and the place will be absolutely crammed full of machines, gadgets, files, and so forth. He'll have to pull everything in on him. He's got to get that heavy mass around him. See this? Now he takes somebody who has been fancy free, who has stayed in an area, let's say somebody, for instance, who might have been raised in Arizona. And he's just got, you know, there's no dearth of this space any place, and he hasn't been moved around a great deal. He's right there, and so forth. We find out where he throws his hat and how he would organize an office. In the first place, you probably wouldn't find him an office. If he had an office, it probably would have been built for him or put together for him by the boss or something of the sort, but he wouldn't have anything in it. His briefcase would be his files, and that would be in his car, and some of his material would be out at the house. You know, and he'd probably carry everything in his head anyhow. You know, he would have no compulsion to put in, and he'd have space. And you ask him to close his eyes and ask him how much space he's conscious of, and he would say, well, there's lots of space. What do you mean? How much space am I conscious of? Just as far as you can see, of course. You say, with your eyes closed? He'd say, yeah, sure. What's closing your eyes and opening your eyes got to do with seeing? You say, be 3 feet back of your head, and he'd say, well, all right, what's so strange about this? Now, as a test of this, someday I'm going to take one of these units, and I'm going to send them out to the Apache Reservation and have them process some Apaches. It's an astonishing experience. The Apache has never known lack of space. Space? It's everywhere. It's just space in all directions. You tell an Apache to be 3 feet back of his head, that'd be nonsense. He's usually, unless he's an old man that's been pounded around by the U.S. government, he's usually already exteriorized. And there are Apaches around here which have great recall in the last four lives. And they remember being cut to pieces by General Miles and cutting to pieces various wagon trains and that sort of thing. Have clear, definite recalls on it. They can tell you the names of every officer who was out here at Fort McDowell and so forth, some 20-year-old Apache. See, we've already seen this phenomenon. I'm not talking to you about wild guesses. I'm talking about things that are in the real universe. Well, if they didn't know the definition of space, then nobody then would have concentrated on this phenomenon of space at all, would they have? Would they just sort of passed it over and said, well, we know that without knowing it. And that's true of too much in scientific investigation. So we get right there to space. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. Now, why does the space become less for the individual? Now, we're right on the line of spotting spots, and boy, is this important stuff. Spotting spots puts space out there. Whatever significance you put into it, it puts space out there for the guy. Okay, what else you do? How many things we add up to this, it puts space out there. Well, now, an individual who has been moved around a great deal has gone through a dwindling spiral of space. So the space of his childhood is fairly large. And the space of his adulthood is quite compressed. But the space of his babyhood is very compressed. Babies don't have much space. You know, they put them in small bunks with bars, and they crawl around the floor. They're not allowed to leave the house, and they can't go out with the girls. And they don't have much space. All right? So we go through a person's life and we find the various times when he had space are not much in re-stimulation, but the times when he didn't have space, boy, are they in re-stimulation. They're just having this, you see. When space is taken away from somebody or compressed in upon somebody, he will eventually have to have. Where does havingness come from? By compression of space. Now, if you were to take a criminal and you were to put him, he's had slight criminal tendencies, juvenile delinquent, something like that, you put him in jail, and you find out he comes out of jail, and he now has a craving to steal things. It would be the finest thing in the world to make a criminal, to put somebody in a closed space, because you convince him that he had to have. You just convince him now that he had to have. Now, if we go back a few planets, we will discover, as we did in the last days of research, definitely on the whole track in Dianetics, you go back a few planets, you find out the punishment which they used to administer was to put a cone of electronic fire above and below to a person and let them both smack. Boom! Boy, that sure made him have to have. Anytime you get in the body after that, he'd interiorize. He'd stay there because he had to have a body. You know, this is a punishment. They used to do this to criminals. They dramatize it here on Earth. They dramatize that incident by putting them in cells, small cells. But the more you crush an individual in, the more you'll have to have. You see that? Now, if that is the case, then this process is aimed at stretching it. See? Was having spots out there. The most elementary process of spotting spots in space would simply be not spotting spots in space, but just spotting spots. There are two things here, by the way. You spot spots by hitting the wall, touching walls and things like that, touching mess. That does not require the remedy of heaviness. And they're spotting spots in space. You know, nothing's holding the space for you. You're just reaching out there and spotting these spots. And boy, does that require a remedy of heaviness. That's why 8C doesn't require a remedy of heaviness. You see, you're touching walls all the time. You've got heaviness. You've got the barriers. They're right there. All right. And then the other one, you're spotting spots in space. Well, you don't have barriers. All right. It tears heaviness to pieces. You try to put a piece of barrier out there. All right. The most elementary process would be simply to get him to spot the spot furthest from him that you'd be absolutely sure created space. See, I mean, you just ask him to get a spot he could be sure of out in front of him someplace, and get another spot he could be sure of, and he's sure that he has space between himself and that spot. Now, that is not an advice technique. I'm just telling you the most elementary form of this. You know, you just ask, well, you, how far away from you could you get a spot that would make space for you? You know, how much space could you actually have? Now, we just merely try to extend that. By the way, I see you look puzzled. How would we do that? We would do that very easily. We would just say, shut your eyes. All right, now how much space do you have? Well, let's spot a little spot further than that, just a quarter of an inch further than that. A little spot a little bit further than that. And one out to the side of you out here, and one out to the other side, and one behind you, and so forth. And we just gradually enlarge the fellow's space just by making him sneak up on it on a gradient scale, you see? That's not an advised process, that's just an elementary process. All right, let's take the phenomena of distance and time, and let's discover that in this universe, it's nothing for a beam of light emanating from a star to be 1 million years in transit, and to arrive at you 1 million years after it has departed from a star. It's nothing. Well, therefore, distance or space and time become associated in this universe. Time is actually a consideration, but there is the experience of time. There is a distance, there is a velocity of particle travel. And the movement of that particle in relationship to its starting point and in relationship to its ending point itself is the consideration of time. You are merely considering that it takes time for it to do it, so therefore you have the phenomena of time. Time is entirely a consideration. It's nothing else. So is space, entirely a consideration. It's too easy for somebody to look over the field of mechanics and get so bogged in mechanics they think, well, space is really there, but space is a viewpoint of dimension, so I'm just making sure that the space which is really there is now there. That's not what we're doing. You're actually making the fellow make space. There wouldn't be any space here at all unless we were all making space all the time and we agreed that it was made and that we were this far apart. Now, the process which you will be using will be to spot distant places and spot a spot in the room. And spot that distant place again and spot a spot in the room. And spot the distant place again and spot a spot in the room. Always spotting it in the physical universe. Because it will appear to be a moving image that will change its distance. Now, here's an example. Wait, no further significance to this than this. You say to somebody, all right, spot Los Angeles. Okay, spot a spot in this one. Spot Los Angeles. He says, sure, I got it. You say, no, which direction is it? Oh, it's over that way. How far does it seem to you?
Oh,
700 yards. You say, well, now look, it's at least 500 miles. Now, let's spot Los Angeles. Now, point to it. How far does it seem to you? We're talking about the physical universe. Now, point to Los Angeles. Got it? He does, you see. He physically raises his hand and he points in that direction and he says, well, it I know it is really about 500 or 600 or 800 miles over that way, but it actually seems to be about 200 yards out there when I do that. And you say, that's fine. Spot a spot in this room. Now spot Los Angeles. And he'll point to it this time. He'll tell you how far away. And you say, spot a spot in this room. And he'll be perfectly content to look at a spot in the room. Something like that. You say, well, I'll spot that spot in this room. Put your finger on it. Size it up. Where is it? He will. You know, see, it's kind of an 8C process. Only you're spotting spots in thin air. And, by the way, if he's in bad shape and you have given him just that many commands, he will all of a sudden start to say, ugh. He'll start to get sick at his stomach. He reduced his happiness just that much. It didn't matter, you see, what mash you told him to mock up. You say, well, mock up Los Angeles and pull it in, and mock up Los Angeles and pull it in. It's just anything that seems to be on the subject, you see. You want to model a mass, create a mass, in other words, pull it in yourself, create a mass and pull it in, create a mass and pull it in, create a mass and pull it in. All right, now, spot Los Angeles. Now, he'll get this mixed up sometimes, and if he's on the verge of exteriorizing, he'll try to be over Los Angeles. Now, this is not the process. You want him to spot Los Angeles from where he is, sitting right there in the auditing room. You don't want him to move out of his body and go over to Los Angeles, because you take a five, and he'll try to do this, and boy, he will get sick. You want him to be right there in the room, see, and he spots Los Angeles, and he spots a spot in the room. Will you make him point to Los Angeles? You make him give you how many miles he thinks it is, and where it seems to be to him, and how far he knows it is, and then make him spot a spot in the room, and then get him spot this spot in the room. You say, put his finger on it. The good hooker is sometimes to say to him, what color is the spot in the room? Oh, it's blue. You say, I said spot a spot in the room. You're spotting a mass of energy in the room. We don't want a mass of energy in the room. We just want a spot, a location. No mass, no energy, just a location in the room. That's all we want. Now, got one? Yeah, it's blue. How big is it? Well, it's about 4 feet across. So we want a pinpoint location right there in the room. Now, finally, he'd get this, see? And you say, all right, now, spot Los Angeles. How far is it? And he'll say, oh, he'll probably by that time be tired and he won't want to point. And you, if you're very polite, socially auditing, you know, you won't make him. But if you're really auditing, you will say, point to it. How far is it? Point to it. Now, you'll notice a funny thing takes place as you do this. You just go over this, see, back and forth, back and forth. What are you doing? What is happening? There's a funny thing's going on. He's generally pointing a horizontal line to Los Angeles. Actually, Los Angeles is on no horizontal line from where he is. Los Angeles would be more like straight through the corner of the far point of the room, because you've got to point through the curvature of Earth. You tell somebody to point to China, he's liable to point out here horizontally and say 8,000 miles or 20,000 miles or something like that. Whereas, as a matter of fact, the actual location of China is straight down. The spot you're asking him to spot is damn near straight down. You get the idea? Well, you don't tell him this, he'll finally get wise to it. He'll finally say, you know, I'm spotting through the Earth when I spot Los Angeles. You say, that's right. There's an awful big hill you'd have to go over in order to get to Los Angeles. That's all right. Or he'll tell you, you know, there's sort of a black ridge out there. Every time I point to Los Angeles, I get a black ridge. That's funny. No, it isn't funny. That much overburden of Earth would be awful black, wouldn't it? If he's pointing through that much of a chunk of Earth, he's naturally got to go through a black hill because the inside of Earth is not lighted. You were down there the last time. The lighting system is disconnected. And so you'll just have him spot this. Well, you don't care what phenomena turns up. You just have him keep on spotting Los Angeles and spotting a spot in the room and spotting Los Angeles, spotting a spot in the room, making sure that he does it both ways. What are you doing? You're bringing Los Angeles into present time. Why is Los Angeles out of present time? Los Angeles is out of present time because of a problem in happiness. This individual does not have enough, and he lost enough, so that when he gets a picture of Los Angeles, he pulls it in on himself. Well, of course, it was a ready-made facsimile that he pulled in on himself, wasn't he? Now, let me give you a little test. what time is the place in where you had breakfast? Is it in the time when you were eating breakfast? Now, if we look this over, most people would have this. True, you see. They've got time and distance so associated that when they start to go far away from them, even a few blocks or a few miles or a few thousand miles or a few light years, some other planet, they just go out of present time to that distance. Now, you could draw a sort of a circus tent effect, you know, a pyramidal tent. And here in the center is the preclear. He's in present time. But everything out of his line of sight is in past time. And the further it is away from him, the further it is out of time. And Los Angeles is back out of time as far as he's concerned. Maybe he was in the town once, you know. And you're spotting the spot where he was in that period in time. And Los Angeles is sitting there, let's say 1939. Los Angeles, 1939. Now he has to spot this room, but he spots the spot in this room with his eyes open or closed. Do this process, eyes open or closed, it doesn't matter. Yes, it does matter a little bit. It's much more savage to do it with the eyes closed, but it'll still produce results. Now you spot Los Angeles, 1939. Now you're spotting this room, this year and moment, you see? Now you spot 1939 Los Angeles. Only you're not asking him to spot this. You don't give him any directions about this. You just want him to spot Los Angeles. First thing you know, you're kind of a... Something happens with relationship to Los Angeles and sitting over there, the proper distance, and it's in present time. This is weird. Los Angeles is now in present time. The goal of the auditor is to get the preclear into present time. Right? Supposing you got him in present time throughout the entire universe, he'd really be in present time. Then we have a gradient scale of present time, don't we? We have the present time right where the preclear is, sitting inside his own skull. The present time of the room in which his body is in. The present time of the rest of the building, which is now out of present time. The present time of the rest of the town, but that's way out of present time, see? The present time of other cities, way in the past. And so here we go. Supposing we brought that all up to actual present time, this instant. Now we get the picture of a ray coming down here from the sun. It takes some minutes for a beam of light to get here from the sun. And you say there's a steady stream of them. And those that are arriving now departed from the sun in the past. Well, supposing we just stopped every particle in the universe, do you know that you would have a present time for the whole universe, which would be the position of each particle in the universe, you see? We just had a simultaneous look at the whole universe, and we stopped every particle in it, and we took a simultaneous look at it. Bang! That would be present time for the physical universe. That particles have to travel from one part of the universe to the other part of the universe. It has no bearing on the situation at all. Every particle is in present time all the time. But somebody viewing them has to wait for them to arrive where he is. It's going to take a certain length of time for them to arrive where he is. And so he gets the idea that they must be in past time, or he's in past time. He gets a fouled up idea of this, you see. Whereas the straight idea is that the whole universe could be in present time all the time. But where a preclear is concerned, he is sort of very much in present time right here. And now the room is more or less in present time. And as we go out, they slide out, further out of present time, where we glimpse some other planets. And that sort of thing. Boy, are they out of time. See, they're way in the past. When we have him spot spots, what we do is get him to discharge the old energy deposits, which are hanging around areas in which he has been and with which he is connected. Old spots, which he is now avoiding. And these are all out of time. So we're bringing the whole universe into present time. We could have a preclear simply sit in a chair and spot various spots a block away or a mile away or a thousand miles away. It wouldn't matter. But as long as we had him spot a spot and then spot a spot in the room and then spot a spot out there, same spot, and spot a spot in the room and spot a spot out there, same spot again, and spot in the room and that same spot again and a spot in the room, that same spot out there and a spot in the room, and all of a sudden, why, that spot out there would be in present time, see? And so would the room be in present time. Now we've got two locations in present time. When you're asking awareness unit to be elsewhere than running the reactive mind or the somatic mind of the body, when you're asking it to do this, you certainly had better not ask it to go away if it can't go away into another present time. You get the idea. Most people that don't exteriorize have past time 3 feet back of their heads. Instead of going 3 feet back of their heads, they go about 1,000 years back. Same. They try to exteriorize in time, not in present time. Unless they can exteriorize in present time, they can't see, they can't hear, can't do anything. All right. We've got to have present time all over there. We want a case of present time all over the place. Everything in present time. The case you're looking at probably is out of present time where he's sitting. He's way out of present time out in the front yard. He's 1,000 years back, 10 blocks away. Steep case. Now, we at least get him into present time where he's sitting in the room, get that room into present time. We do this with AC. We get him perfectly willing to receive effects with opening procedure by duplication. And along about now, why, we'd better get the rest of the universe into present time a little bit. Well, as you spot spots, you have to remedy having this. Why? Because he's held on to old energy deposits which he made in the past and which are still in the past. He's holding on to those merely because they're mass. He has no other reason to hold on to them. And they tell him, these energy masses, that a spot is out of present time. The spot actually is not out of present time. Let me give you that very clearly. It's not out of present time. The spot you're trying to spot is in present time. But the spot he keeps getting is an old energy mass, which isn't the physical universe spot at all. See, he gets this old energy mass, and he spots that. That's way out of present time. Then he spots a spot in the room. He spots this other spot out there, way out of present time. And eventually, he's going to shred the pieces, or duplicate, or look at, or knock out, that old energy deposit. And he's then going to be free to spot the spot up. This earlier? If everything was in present time all over, he wouldn't have any difficulty spotting any spot in space. Now, why spots? This comes under the whole subject of location. And we get one of the next most important things in Dianetic Scientology today, which is location. Now, we have a pre-logic, and this pre-logic simply says that theta can locate things in space and time. Locate objects, items, particles in space and time. And it can create space simply by looking. And create objects so as to locate them in the space and time, create. See, you can create the space, then locate things in it. But location is quite important. One of the most important things about our whole science and subject is location. Precise location. This is the pre-logics. You get that? Location is more important than a mass. Location is far more important than mass. And so we get a pre-clear pointing things out. Why does he start avoiding location? What's some proof of this? Well, I'll give you the old story about the little dog. The little dog gets hit on the road, and after that he doesn't avoid the car that hit him or the person that was driving the car that hit him. He doesn't avoid grass. He doesn't avoid any of the masses around there at all. But every time he comes near that location, he cringes and goes wide from the location. He's afraid of that spot. Well, do you know that people, after they have had a quarrel and divorce and something like that, cannot think of anything else, usually, but sell all the possessions or something, and they kind of start on that scale. They sell some of their possessions, they get rid of some, and then the next thing you know, they'll be getting rid of the house. They got to get rid of that location. Now we'll take the French. Why did the French pull out of this continent? They were some of the early people here, you see. I mean, a lot of the early work was done here, particularly down around New Orleans and so forth. French, all this was. And then it was taken over to the Spanish, and the English got some of it, and then Spain got some of it back again, and finally, why, it got all sold out. What occasioned this? Do you know the French never went back around their old settlements at all? Never even made a bid for them? Nothing like that. It's because it was a nice, great, big spot called danger.
Too many people had died. Did you ever hear of John Law and the Mississippi Bubble? The Mississippi Bubble, the area around New Orleans, being promoted by a Scotchman, John Law, brought France into bankruptcy and was the primary factor in destroying the royal line and government of France. There wasn't anybody with money in all of France who didn't get turned up on his face by the Mississippi Bubble. This was a location then, you see. It became a dangerous location. They had no slightest argument with anybody who wanted to take this location. They'd given up the spot in space. That's all we're getting around to. They'd given this up as an empire. They didn't even think of it anymore or want it. All right, we wonder why a lot of soldiers and so forth don't immediately want to go back to battlegrounds and so forth. They don't want to see them again. Spots in space is what they're avoiding. But they get so bad off, they don't even know about a spot in space. You take somebody who was shot up in a destroyer, you know, and the Battle of Jutland, World War I, and we find out that he can't stand the sea. Look, there's only one danger spot. That's the spot where the Battle of Jutland was fought. Now we start spotting spots in space, and we all of a sudden discover this spot. Preacher says, you know, that's like that. Facsimile is an engram here, some sort or another. He'll tell you all about this. Having remedies and having this, and having spot that spot again, having spot again, having spot again. Take all Conway out and get that spot into present time. You know what'll happen? He'll suddenly like the sea again. There is association. First they start to avoid the spot. Then they start to avoid the objects associated with the spot. It's the spot first. What happens to the individual's own universe? It has coincided with the physical universe to such a marked degree, and he is lost so often, that he's avoiding all the spots in the physical universe, which brings him down to a pinpoint, which makes him smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and makes his own universe cave in on him tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter, until he is simply a dense mass. And there you get the preclear and a theta body, you know? I mean, guys who have large energy masses around their faces, there you actually get the anatomy in an engram itself. What's the engram doing there? Well, the engram is the incident, and it's now missing from the spot. If it were returned to its proper spot and time and place and so forth, or if you could contact that original place, you would find out, bang, this fellow's bank would straighten out with regard to the subject of this engram, which is out of location. In other words, it's off the spot and location. As long as it's off the spot and location, it won't entirely disappear. Hence, we avoid running engrams. We spot spots and remedy happiness. Now, we're having reach out, spot these various spots. Next thing you know, he'll come up with an automobile accident. He's had some big impact or something. I'm sorry. Well, that automobile accident will look like it's right here in front of his face. And here he's sitting 2,000 miles away from the place where he had the automobile accident. And yet, the automobile accident appears to be right here. He's got the mask because he wants the mask, but he's avoiding the spot and space where the accident occurred. So even this mass is avoiding the spot and space where the accident occurred. And that's how an engram comes in on him. He avoids the spot where it belongs, and he gets the mass and brings it in here. Now you just start spotting these spots around, and he'll eventually start spotting this darn spot up here where he had this accident 2,000 miles away. He'll call your attention to it, something like that. You could go on and simply ask him to spot that spot. Wouldn't particularly be good auditing. You just want him to spot spots, any spot. See, but he'll call your attention to this spot, and he's liable to get somatics about this spot, and so on. Let him spot it. Let him have some fun. It'd do just as much good if you went on and spotted the exact center of Canada. Spot the center of Canada, center of this room, center of Canada, center of this room. Nothing ever happened to him in the center of Canada. Well, you're at least letting him spot one spot, aren't you? See, you're spotting a spot. What we're restoring to him is his ability to spot locations at a distance without fear and without the destruction of happiness, and making it possible for him to make space. And he, of course, thinks we're trying to remedy all of his errors in the past. And we're just trying to make it possible for him to get stretched out there and spot spots without feeling he's going to cave in And we don't even want particular spots. But you could eradicate the entire past of an individual just by spotting spots, you see. He'll want to get specific. You better stay fairly general. Because, boy, it gets to be an endless task if you spotted every spot where he'd had an impact for 74 trillion years. Now, the very funny thing about these spots is that the individual has spotted them because he was interested in them. He had an impact or an accident in the area and became disinterested in them, and without disconnecting the energy mass from them, withdrew his interest. So there we had him hung up out there, disinterested in this spot, but an energy mass connected to it. That's an interesting frame of affairs, because every time he gets around this spot, he starts to feel bored or nervous, or when he thinks about it, he feels bored. It's because there's no interest in it, but there's a large mass of disinterest. What is a solid? A solid is disinterest. Yet this spot will be very important. What is importance? Importance is a solid. Solid is importance. A disinterest is importance. How disinteresting can you get important? All right. This, then, is the condition of our preclear. Now, as you spot these spots, he, of course, will look at them. As he looks at them, if he were to make a perfect duplicate of the masses which he saw out there, the entire energy mass would disappear. But what are you trying to do? Wipe out the whole mass universe? Because that's the end product of duplication. Perfect duplication is just be to wipe out the whole universe. I don't know. Leave it here for somebody else to run into. You've had fun. You know, don't worry about this particularly. But what you're doing by remedying havingness is you're getting him over his anxiety of havingness, which brings in all of these old masses and leaves the location out there. The location's still there. It's there because he knows it's there, but it's there and he's avoiding its being there. And by avoiding its being there, he's pulling himself down to a pinpoint. They're all out of present time, all these old spots. What you're trying to do is bring them into present time. But you do that by being entirely unspecific about the spots. And you could get just as much processing by making a fellow spot, a spot at a distance out here, let us say, making him spot Albuquerque. Nothing ever happens in Albuquerque. Making him spot a spot in Albuquerque, spot a spot in this room, spot a spot in Albuquerque, this room. Until he was very sure that he could spot with considerable accuracy a spot in Albuquerque. Did anything ever happen to him in Albuquerque? No. Nothing ever happened to him. We don't care what happened to people. We're not processing their past. We're not interested in the fellow's past. He is not the product of his past. He's the product of his own damn foolishness. It's only a consideration that he's the product of his past. It's not a truth. Now, this business of separateness runs automatically along with spotting spots. You could ask an individual, simply go around the environment as one of the R2 processes are, and simply get the fact of things he's separate from, getting certainly separate from this, and certainly separate from that, and certainly separate from someplace else, and if we just kept this up as a process, we would, of course, get him eventually localized, because he's buttered all over the place. Now, separateness would go along with spotting spots, wouldn't it? We're actually asking spot spots when we're saying, are you separate from that spot? Are you separate from another spot? Because the funny part of it is, he believes he's connected to every spot in the whole universe where he's had an accident, an upset, an emotional winding. He thinks he's connected to all these spots. And we get some freak there, and we say, be 3 feet back of your head. We might as well say, be 3 feet back of the mass universe. You better go over it. He's connected up in all directions. He's connected with all these spots, and all the connecting links lead into the past. We're not interested in processing his past. We're merely interested in getting the universe into present time. We'll simply do that by asking him to spot spots and remedy havingness. See that? Why do you have to remedy havingness? Well, if you start spotting spots without remedying havingness, you're going to have a picnic. Because he's going to find an awful lot of beautiful energy masses that he's overlooked pulling in on himself before. For instance, there's the time he got beat up by the big bully. You know, there were an awful lot of nice impacts in that. And you ask him to spot a spot somewhere around this, you know, let's spot a spot around the childhood home, let's spot the room, spot a spot around the childhood home. All of a sudden, he starts to feel real bad. But it's not remedy of havingness, particularly, that you become immediately alert to. He's sitting there with this great big picture of this bully beating him up. Well, how'd he get that? Well, it's that childhood home. Of course, you've got an engram about the childhood home. Now, let's be a real bad auditor and do something about this incident. Let's do something specific about being beaten up. Let's be a lousy auditor. Now, let's be an efficient auditor. Let's just spot the child at home again and spot the room. And he says this big facsimile, you see, is here. I mean, I got this picture and a bully, and his fist is arrested right there in front of my nose. You would simply say just not to let him run the session. You run it, still running the session. You'd have a spot piloted home. Spot in the middle of the room. All right. Now, mark up a planet, mark up a bully, mark up anything you want. Gutsy, but you tell him something specific. You say, well, mark up your childhood home and pull it in, aren't you? And mark it up and pull it in, and mark it up and pull it in, and mark it up and pull it in, and mark it up and pull it in. Get a lot of them in. Now mark one up and throw it away, and mark up another one and throw it away, and mark up one, pull it in. Either way, too. See, just as long as you get them to accept them and reject them. And you know what will happen? That facsimile of that bully will disappear. Why did it get there in the first place? It's because by spotting spots, you stretched out his space. By stretching out his space, you robbed him of some of his havingness. And having robbed him of some of his havingness, he had to get it from someplace, so he picks up this nice big gob of energy where he got the dickens beaten out of him, and he brings it in and pulls it in on the body. And that's how he got it there. And that's what facsimile restimulation is. And that is the study of facsimiles and engrams. And that's how they get there. You ask somebody to just look 5 feet in front of his body sometimes. Take somebody who's got these 18-inch thick glasses. They look like they're wearing a turret over their head or something like that. And they go around and you say, take off your glasses. Now spot a spot out there in front of your face. They're liable to throw up right in your lap. I mean, you just ask them to spot a spot, see? And the universe is so dangerous. What are they wearing glasses for? So as to inhibit them from spotting spots, of course. Glasses, by the way, reduce the image, you see. And so it can appear to be further away and less dangerous. It can make these spots much less dangerous. So the things can be really very close to them and appear very undangerous to them. Well, you just have them spot spots back and forth, one way or the other, and you'll tear up their havingness, but you'll also permit them to make space. You'll permit them to make space. You will permit them to remedy havingness. You will also get them over a whole bunch of ideas about the past. Now, these are extremely, I would say, extremely simple processes. The remedy of havingness and spotting spots in space. How could you err? You could actually err a little bit on this one line. You could get very specific or terribly interested every time he had a facsimile show up. You see that? And you process the facsimile. You could err by having him spots in space all around the place and not remedy his havingness. And those are the ways you can err. And there really are no other ways. These are very basic, very interesting, very easy to do processes. They don't work where you don't hound your preclear into actually spotting the spot. We don't want masses of energy. We simply want locations in space, and that's what we're interested in.